We're already in November, late November at that. Kind of amazing. We have the, of course, agenda online. We've got several things on tap for today. And the first order of business is to approve the October meeting minutes. So could I get a motion to approve those? Any discussion over those minutes? All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the minutes do pass. Reports, just a few items of information for you, as you see on there. I pass this along to the SEC as well. Everyone is hopefully aware of this. We have a new Senate seat that we've created for the newly created Department of Psychological Sciences that was as of November 1st. In the Senate charter, we state that all of those tenurable items, all those tenurable segments of the university population, I'm not thinking about the name that I'm looking for right now, but not all departments, it's other areas too, that can get a seat on the Senate, so we had to go ahead and create that new seat. Aaron Weichman has remained as the Senate representative from the Department of Psychological Sciences. He was the former representative for the Department of Psychology. That then left a void in the Department of Psychology, and so there's a newly elected senator from the Department of Psychology as of November 1st, and that is Crystal Clayton, who is newly elected from there. So we appreciate both of them and their willingness to serve on Senate. We have also called an SEC. There's going to be a count in the spring. We do this every couple of years anyway, and so because of some of the rearranging that's happened, we've changed the number of faculty members who are present in different colleges, so we need to do a new audit of the numbers of faculty members in the various colleges to see how many at-large seats there would be for those different colleges. So we will do that count and that audit in the spring for the next term, so that will take effect in the next term. That is basically the information I have for my report for you. Anything from the vice chair?
Just a quick reminder, if you are putting forth a motion or seconding a motion, please say your last name so Heidi can get it down in the minutes. Glasgow's graduation ceremony is December 5th at 6:30 at the Plaza Theater in Glasgow. If anybody would like to attend, we have some outstanding graduates coming forth. Other than that, let's hope we have a really long Thanksgiving break that begins with a short Senate meeting. Heidi, what's up to you?
Please remember to sign in. The procedure is to cross out your name if you are present. If you are subbing for somebody, then write your name to the right of that person's name. If you have questions, just come on up and I'll clarify it for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer and Heidi. Molly, anything from the Coalition of Senate and Faculty Leadership for Higher Ed? Oh, hey.
I'm not Molly, but filling she said in. She had no report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on with our advisory reports then, and our faculty regent, Dr. Minter.
Hi, folks. As you are aware by now, we've got some trouble here. And as someone who absolutely would not let me name them told me today, if this isn't the bottom, then I really don't want to see what bottom looks like. And I understand that. We are 668 students short, 1.6 million short on budget. And I think that the College Heights Herald got this exactly right in this week's editorial, which I recommend to all of you. They say WKU has finally overplayed its hand, and they will spare us the chorus of "We told you so." So will I. The editorial board of the Owensboro Messenger Inquirer, which you may not read every day, also takes WKU, as well as the University of Kentucky and University of Louisville, to task in an editorial that ran recently after Jim Ramsey spoke in Owensboro. And it chastises all of us for building sprees while we cry out for more state funds, which is an unfortunate sentiment in one of our major service areas. The Board of Regents has not received any more analysis that is more detailed than what I've read in the Herald, and I'm hoping to get that kind of detailed analysis at the December committee meetings, which will be the Friday of finals week. Now, I'm disappointed, to be honest with you, that I got the news from the media, not from inside, that other state universities in the Commonwealth have actually shown some growth while we have declined. Now, that really ought to tell us something, shouldn't it? And I think we have to ask ourselves what's going on here. So we're still figuring that out, I'm told. But to me, it is obvious that this is not a one-time blip on the radar. It's a wake-up call. So here is what I fervently hope happens next. It's time that we regroup. It is time we think about reality instead of what some wish to be true. It is time that we ask ourselves some tough questions about the university's priorities and spending. It's not a new theme, but it's one that we really have to wrestle with right now. It's time that we stop moving forward on wants instead of needs. And I hope that some of my board colleagues, the eight who voted to fund the project this summer, will take note that our budget shortfall almost exactly equals next year's bond payment for the new building, the one that we're diverting Navitas tuition monies to repay. While in the meantime, our colleagues in Thompson North move out mid-year out of a shabby building that desperately needs replacement. And I know what the argument would be. Well, that's something we've asked for state funding to replace, not something we could build ourselves. But, you know, we could have done more for them. I think everybody knows that, if different choices had been made. And finally, I fervently hope that we fund our academic programs and our employees competitively. I thank our colleagues on faculty welfare who continue to study this issue. And I fervently hope that we will hear no more false dichotomies about funding either salary or benefits, because I think this group knows that it's not an either or. It's always about priorities and what we choose to do. So what I hope we learn from this enrollment drop, again, while others in the state have shown slight growth, is this. You can build it, and you can fund entertainment, but apparently that's not why students choose to come to WKU. Whether it is price, priorities, or just the inconvenient moment that supply and demand leveled out, we have an opportunity here. We have an opportunity to check ourselves, to regroup, and to decide what is truly important and to pursue those things. I can't tell you how much I need to hear your thoughts. There's never been a more important time to let me know. And when I speak to you next month at the December Senate, it will be to preview what's going to be on the Board of Regents agenda the next day and for January. Please let me hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you, Regent Mentor. Moving on to our report from the Provost, Dr. Emsley.
Okay, thank you. We only received two Senate recommendations last meeting, one from the Graduate Council, one from the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, both approved. A few words about budget, funding models, staffing plans, academics, and so forth. Not a lot of detail, but the state funding model that the CPE will recommend includes several measures which we'd actually do rather well in. One is degree productivity, one is college readiness, and the adult learner initiative that I've spoken to Senate a couple of times about as well is $2.4 million in the CPE budget request to fund that. And that's an initiative to create modularized competency-based degree programs to address the million or so adult learners who wish to return to college. Continue to fund academics despite some of the recent challenges. The staffing plan continues. There's some 40 faculty searches currently ongoing. We're also moving some incubator programs that have been funded by DLO on one-time funds, what I like to sometimes call recurring one-time funds because they're there. We're moving some of these programs into the base budget for next year and creating additional faculty lines in the process. And those are faculty lines outside of the staffing plan. The numbers aren't quite final yet because it's tough to look at the number of faculty, whether you're counting slots or actual occupied slots, but we are very, very close to meeting our action plan goal for faculty to student ratio. That started off at 33 professorial faculty per 1,000 FTE students with a goal of 36, and we're very close to that goal already. And so, yeah, the next focus will be to address, as Patty says, compensation, whether it be in the form of salary or benefits or both. This is our SACS accreditation year. The compliance report is due to SACS next September. That's 10 months from now. And we're off to Atlanta, a group of us, to the SACS annual meeting. We're very pleased with the way that's going. A lot of faculty have participated in the various committees. Our compliance report has grown, so it's not, but still in paper form, but it'll be on the web soon. It's about twice as thick as it used to be, with lots more interesting examples where basically we show that we are indeed compliant with all 83 or whatever number it is of the SACS compliance principles. I'm very confident that we are compliant. It's just a matter of persuading external reviewers who are viewing this compliance report online from afar that we are indeed compliant, and we're working very hard to make sure that's true. A big part of that is faculty credentials. I think 95% of the institutions that submit compliance reports get flagged in one way or another for faculty credential issues, and we've been paying very close attention to that, and I thank all the faculty who've got their current CVs placed in digital measures, who have the faculty groups who have provided what we call the faculty the degree field memoranda, that someone with a degree in such and such can teach in this area because they're closely enough related. International credential evaluations. I know you've all been very busy with this, but this is very important. Again, say 95% or so of universities get flagged for this during the review of the compliance report, and I'm pretty determined not to be one of those 95%. I'd like to be part of the five. The other key aspect of the SACS process involves something called a quality enhancement plan, which is a plan to improve the academics of the university in some sort of meaningful way across the board. We are very close to sort of nailing that down. We're almost certain it will be something along the lines of an evidence and argument theme. We will probably attempt to connect that very closely to the connections courses, the 9-hour connections course component of the Cullinade General Education Plan. You should all have received an email. There will be a series of forums this Monday. I apologize for the timing, but we've had forums on the governance issue. We'll have other forums and other things coming up. We had to get this in. So on Monday, there will be three, two in the main campus and one at Glasgow. And for the folks at Etown and Owensboro, we'll IVS the main campus programs to them. They're all the same. Roughly the same. I mean, the agenda is the same for all three. You can attend them all if you wish, but one should be enough. We try to work it so that no matter where you are, what your teaching schedule is, you can attend one. And we're going to give a SACS update, a little more detail than I just gave, on where we're at with the compliance report, and then Doug McElroy will discuss the elements of the QEP plan. We will also be soliciting volunteers to help refine this concept into a kind of accessible rubric that we can present formally to SACS, and we do that in March of 2015. That may seem like a long way away, but it's getting closer by the moment. So see you on Monday. Thanks.
And thank you, Provost Emsley. Moving on to our next report, which is from our SGA president, Ms. Boca.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Tonight is SGA's Dine with Decision Makers event that functions as an opportunity for students to discuss higher education issues with state leaders. This is our fifth year doing the program, and so that'll be tonight at the Alumni Center. December 3rd is the next and final SGA meeting that we'll be having for this fall semester, and we'll be starting again in the spring. I'd also, last but not least, like to call attention to the proposed IT policies listed under today's information items. Several students have expressed concerns to me over some of the parts of the policies. And with IT influencing many of our daily activities on campus, it's crucial for us to address these. I'd like to first talk about the last paragraph of page 1 of policy 5.5020. It quotes, university officials and upper management under the direction of university general counsel can access, seize, and or commandeer any and all physical or electronic resources as deemed necessary to address a given situation. I and many other students I know cannot support this until a given situation is definitely defined. Later, the document says users shall have no expectations of privacy associated with email transmissions or of other data, content, and information stored, transmitted, or accessed on university systems and resources. quote from a student, I think we as a university can foster the value of privacy by defining at least some sort of privacy, perhaps not on university hardware, but at least on university software or networks. And another student also added that the no expectations of privacy clause is a big issue that makes many students uncomfortable, as well as the vagueness of physical or electronic materials. They're not sure whether that implies WKU can block things such as laptops or Xbox from ever connecting to their networks again. Anyway, they overall feel it's very vague and heavy-handed, so I felt the need to address this to you all. And that's all. Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Boca. And actually, we do have two guests here today to address those IT policies. So I know that we have our reports next. I know that our guests have to be somewhere a little bit later on, so they're kind of limited in their amount of time they can spend with us today. So I would just ask if there is any opposition from the group to moving those IT informational items up on the agenda to addressing those now. Is there any opposition to moving those items? Okay. Let's go ahead and do we need to have a motion on that, or is that acceptable? I didn't think we did. Okay. So let's go ahead and discuss those IT items, those information items. We have those three IT policies that have been brought to us. One of those includes the 20-page, I think it is, information security plan. All of those have been posted online. Hopefully you've had a chance to review those. And then, of course, there is the Herald article that was today, and then Ms. Boca, of course, addressed some of the issues within these IT policies. We discussed them somewhat at SEC, but we do have with us today, and they were at SEC as well, we have Bob Owen and Gordon Johnson with us to discuss a little bit about these policies. So I would ask them to just talk a little bit about the policies in general and about what brought these about, some information about them, and then we'll take some questions and comments from senators. Either way, you can come up here and use the mic if you like.
Sure. Good afternoon. I know some of you I don't. I'm Bob Owen, the Vice President of IT. This is Gordon Johnson, the Associate Vice President of IT. And so we're here today to talk to you about the IT policies and procedures that there's three policies that were forwarded on to you. A quick little bit of background about everything. Prior to this, we had policies in place, but they hadn't really been updated in a number of years. And as policies were added and things changed, things got added, and they basically became somewhat unwieldy and out of date, sometimes duplicative, sometimes confusing. And so about a year ago, I tasked my senior management, that's Gordon in charge of the project, and the other directors that report to me, John Bowers in charge of academic computing, Jeppy Sumter for networking, Lori Douglas for technical support services, and of course James Mergis, who's now on to Salt Lake City and KUED, but it was also one of my senior management team, to take a look at the policies and try to refine them, update them, put them into some kind of a cohesive, comprehensive whole that made some sense and reflected a lot of changes. There were some things that were really, really out of date. And so they worked on that pretty diligently over the course of a year. And about a month ago, they completed their work and forwarded on to me nine policies that were IT policies. Per the policy on policies, if I've got that right, the provost, I took these to administrative council. I had identified two policies that I figured that the faculty senate would like to comment on. The provost identified another one. Frankly, I don't remember which of the three were which, but the final result was there were three policies that were referred to, the Senate Executive Committee. Right? Okay. So they got referred to Senate Executive Committee. I met with the Senate Executive Committee, talked to them briefly and told them what I've just told you, answered a few questions that they had about the policies, and then the Senate Executive Committee voted to refer this for comment and suggestions to the full Academic Senate, which is University Senate. Sorry, I know you guys as Faculty Senate, but you're University Senate officially. So that's what brings us here today. Again, I would note a couple of things that A lot of work went into these. These really codify the ways that we have been doing business, and they're also representative of the policies from a number of other major universities. We looked at a number of universities for models. They also represent best practice as it exists today in our industry and in our discipline in dealing with technology. So I'm here to answer questions. I'm here to clarify things if I can. I'm certainly, depending on how many questions or suggestions that come forward, I know that you have somebody taking minutes, and it would be great if there's written a copy of that could get to me if there's a lot of suggestions. We'll note what we can, but that's always helpful. Thank you. I would like to finally, I guess, just recognize the work that my staff did, because they put an awful lot of time and effort in it. And also some of you contributed. Eric sent us a link to, it wasn't Exeter. Xavier, yeah, one of those X universities. So anyways, that we used. And but I thank you to my staff for having put in the work to do that. So there were three policies, 5.5010, 5.5020, and 5.5050. So perhaps, Margaret, I don't know how you'd like to proceed, maybe one by one? Okay. So let me, and I don't want to mess up somebody's laptop here. I don't know who's. So how about let's start with policy 5.5010. This is the information security policy, and attached to that, I'm sorry, did you?
Oh, go ahead and say what you're going to say. I was just going to direct the
okay, thank you. I appreciate that. This is the information security policy, and attached to it is an information security plan, which gets kind of technical in some places. I don't know how exciting that is for non-techies, but we're required to have it, and so 5.5010.
Okay, so this is the first one that we were linked to on the information items. Are there any comments or questions regarding this particular policy, 5.5010? Okay, I don't hear any concerns about that one. If there are any, then please forward those along, and we can get those to Bob Owen for consideration. Let's move on then to the policy 5.5020.
Yeah. And let me also just say, these are not set in stone, and that is to say that, I was asked in the story in the Herald about the speed of adopting these and having time to consider these. We're willing to consider your comments and your thoughts at any time. I don't see this. I'd like to get something in place so we're covered legally and liability from a liability standpoint we're protected. But again, I mean, if you have thoughts or don't have thoughts on something today, and then 2 or 3 months from now you have thoughts and you want to add some additional comments, we're happy to listen. There's no, statute of limitations on feedback and our willingness to look at these things. So 5.5020 is the information technology acceptable use policy.
Okay, so 5.5020. Questions or comments about 5.5020? Well, yes, ma'am. And microphone, I'm
yes.
Sure there's.
And name.
And name, yes.
I'll just talk really loud.
We need, actually, we're recorded, so, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I would just like to hear you address Ms. Boca's concerns
sure.
About that.
What is your name?
Lauren McLean from okay. Sociology.
So let's see. Ken, I think you've cited first on page 1 towards the bottom, and that is I wrote my notes down, and I don't have a place to put all this open here. So expectation of privacy.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. This is simply reflective of Supreme Court rulings, and as well the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky has issued a, it's called Your Duty Under the Law, the Kentucky Open Records and Open Meetings Act. This is an Attorney General's document, and contains Attorney General's opinions. And it states very clearly that there is no right to privacy for state-provided assets, digital assets. The Supreme Court has held that that is the case, and the Attorney General has, since these are state-funded. I mean, we're a university, but we're an agency of the state, really, state-funded resources. So that's where that comes from.
Okay. Further comments, questions? Yes. And microphone and name, please.
My name is Shura Polachek, Theater and Dance. So what counts as an asset if I use my WKU office computer and check my personal email? Does that mean you have all the right to read my personal email? If I check my Facebook from that computer, do you have the right to read my Facebook? If I use my own computer but use the WKU network, do you then have the right to read anything I'm emailing from that? Like, where does the line get drawn? Because I don't find it clear in this policy.
Sure. Basically, if you're using, so you ticked off a whole bunch of scenarios, so let me try to wade through them. If you're using your WKU computer to access non-WKU resources, whether that you mentioned Facebook, you and a couple others, I think,
personal email.
Do we have the right, per the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, to go into your computer to see what's on your hard drive in this instance? Now, part of this stuff is cloud-based, and so that's, I don't want to get too hair-splitting, but some email systems deposit their, the email resides in the cloud, the cache is in the cloud, there's nothing that's stored locally. We would have the right to go and to take a look if we, again, let me make sure this is understood, per the direction of the general counsel. I really want to make that very clear that I've said it before, let me say it again. I and my staff have neither the time, the resources, nor the inclination to be the internet police. I took a quick look at our stats, just so you know. Every day, 233,000 emails are inbound to our system. Every day, some, I think it was 54,000, 48,000 emails go out every single day from us. And every day, 20,400, on average, 20,400 unique devices access our network. You know, actively, we do not monitor this stuff. We just don't have the resources to do it. So what I'm talking about is basically retrospectively, if there was an investigation. If somebody came to us and lodged a complaint, and that would then go through either Judicial Affairs or the General Counsel's office. And they came to us and they said, go take a look at Professor Smith's workstation. Could we go look at that workstation? Yes. If you accessed something that was Facebook, your personal email, and it deposited it on the hard drive of that workstation as an artifact, would we have the right to look at that? Yes. Now, some types of email, like Yahoo and others, it used to be Yahoo, I don't know if it's that way right at the moment, they don't leave any artifacts on your computer. And so no, we wouldn't, I have no idea if they're done in that case. You mentioned if you used your own computer to access the network, like Facebook, all those types of things. We cannot look at your computer without a search warrant. I'm sorry to say this over again, but I don't want to look at your computer. I really just don't care, unless you're doing something hugely illegal, you know, and plotting to kill your fellow faculty member wouldn't it be a good thing. Child pornography is not a good thing. And so, I mean, we really just don't care. And we wouldn't have the right to access a personal resource, let me put it that way, whether it's an iPad, smartphone, an Ultrabook, MacBook Air, whatever the case may be that is yours that you're using to access a resource. Now, if your personal resource has launched an attack on our network, then you bet that we're going to shut off your port. We're going to shut up. We'll find your IP address and your MAC address, and we're going to shut that off Absolutely, we're going to do that. But for we have no way to other than we're alerted that there is an attack, there's really no way we have any knowledge actively that there's something untoward going on real time. We don't do that. Now, I believe you had a third. I'm sorry, I thought there were three examples. Okay.
I might add to this that our major concern is operational and security. I mean, we're not interested in, if something goes on with your machine that causes an operational problem or a security problem, we want to maintain the ability to go look at your machine, mitigate the problem, take care of it, whether it's a file, a hacking situation, whatever. If we were going to look at your personal information, we would have to have some kind of a court order to do that. But it's a catch-22 in a way, because we want to maintain and need to maintain the ability to get at any university-owned device or resources for operational integrity, et cetera. So, I mean, that's basically just what we're trying to maintain there. So.
If I can call on you, or Margaret has to call.
Well,
on you, right?
I just wanted to make one follow-up comment on that I was thinking of. Perhaps some rephrasing could be done within that statement. And just as I'm hearing some of these comments and talking about maybe university-owned computers versus personal computers, mm-hmm. specifying that, or specifying the situations in which that might arise. For instance, if there is a legal means for seizing that computer. So if there is a search warrant, for instance, and so specifying that sort of information, because then we would know that there was either illegal activity being conducted or there was high suspicion of illegal activity being conducted that was going through the legal system. So that's just a comment that I had that perhaps. And so, Eric, you have a comment.
So can I? I'm going to rely on the written, so I don't have to jot all this down where you guys are suggesting things. So please, when you're done, thanks. Okay.
And there's a recording of this as well.
Okay.
So.
Thanks.
Hi, Eric Reed, History. I generally think this is a good policy. I think it's important that faculty know exactly what can and cannot happen to the things they use every day, about the information that they want to pass to people, what's private and what's not. It's important. And I think what I'm talking about in terms of changing this policy, little tweaks more than anything. And centered in on that same paragraph, mm-hmm. especially the part about the general counsel, because I think part of putting down a policy like this is to create a sense of transparency about exactly how information is going to be handled on your end as well as on our end. And so my suggested tweak would be to create the same kind of transparency at the general counsel's level. Put into the policy that a log will be maintained of orders that the general counsel might give to seize property or check information, so that there could be a public records request to see exactly, you know, get the transparency on that end as well. And that way, both our side, when we're using our computers to do things, it's transparent to you, and when there's also transparency at the top. Make sense?
Yeah, I can't commit for the general counsel, but I will share that.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead again.
Lauren McLean again. I'm on page 2, one of the last bullets under protection and rights of acceptable use, and it says removing university-owned technology equipment of any type from university premises without prior written approval from the proper university management. So what would that be? Like, the university bought me my iPad that I use at home,
sure.
or a laptop I use at home. So what kind
of... I would interpret that to be department head. In this case, your department head, right,
mm-hmm.
bought you those things?
Right.
Yeah, so that university management in that case would be your department head. And so they bought it for you, and
right,
so obviously...
So that is the written approval then,
yeah.
the purchase order?
Yes, that's how
okay.
I would interpret that. It's pretty obvious an iPad is it's a portable resource, so yeah.
Mark Reeves from SGA. First of all, I just want to thank you all for coming out and addressing a lot of these concerns. And I think a lot of the kind of things that you've addressed here are things that might be helpful to include in the policy, just so that it's clear what the terminology is and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But I'd kind of concur with Professor Reed. I know for me, the main concern is it seems like a very large grant of authority in the paragraph about the general counsel can direct, you know, the seizure or commandeering of resources for a given situation. I guess what I'd like to see in the policy is the definition of a given situation, because, I mean, any situation can be given. So I guess I would appreciate it if you would pass that along
to the
general counsel and further on. I know that's not really an IT decision.
No, but I'm happy to forward it on.
Yeah. So, but I appreciate your all's work, but I do share the pretty major concerns about that, because I'd, like Dr. Reed said, I'd like to see transparency at the top too, so that it's clear why things are being done and the process that's being followed. So it's not just any, you know, somebody in the president's office can do something and, you know, they can point to this policy and say, well, see, we have the right to do this, and then there's nothing else anybody can do. So,
are there any other questions or comments regarding this policy, which is policy 5.5020? Question. Oh, yes. Regent Mentor.
I concur with what Senators Reed and Reeves both said about creating a log for transparency that's available through open records requests. I think that's absolutely crucial to maintain the integrity of the policy. The other thing I would add in that same paragraph, and that same sentence about general counsel at the end, to address a given situation, I would add, in accordance with state and federal statute and attorney general opinions. Again, just so it's mm-hmm. very clear what the parameters are and that there can't be anything done that is just because we want to do it. It has to be completely in compliance. And I would add the same phrase on page 2, 1, 2, 3, 4th bullet point. This is the one about abusing, harassing another user, which is the one that caught the attention of the fire organization. But I would also add, as defined by federal or state statutes there. Again, just making it clear you're complying with stalker laws or, you know, appropriate.
Provost Emsley, you have a comment?
Yeah, I have a comment to the comments. I just want to make sure that Senator Reed, Regent Mentor, and Senator Reeves know what they're asking for here. Or would clarify it. Suppose somebody with malicious intent accuses Senator Reed of having illegal activities on his computer, and those allegations turn out to be totally false. You want a record that you were, in fact, that investigation for that particular alleged offense occurred? Because perception sometimes is reality, and you have to defend it. Do we want to remove the record if that allegation turned out to be false?
Well, hopefully I will never find myself in that situation. But the important thing is to have transparency in the enforcement official's office. And that's what the purpose of having a log of when a particular... I'm sure that when you're doing some kind of response to an attack on the system, you keep a log of what you do so you can check what you've done.
To an extent, I mean, you got on, when our system's under attack, it's all hands on deck. So
yeah,
I'm not furiously scribbling, and then we did this. I'm trying to keep it alive. So
I mean, there should also be a record of the times when the general counsel orders people to seize equipment, check emails, and actually act on this policy. Just as there are, the information that we have on our computers is public, can be seized by the university. It just seems like a sensible precaution. But anyway, of course that would suck. So, but you know, the larger idea is transparency, not hiding what might be an embarrassing situation.
Yeah, and many states, and I believe Kentucky is one of them, you could be accused of something, and that may make the front page of the newspaper, and that can be difficult to get over sometimes. But if you're subsequently acquitted, that doesn't show up on your record somewhere. But you'd be creating a record where 6 years ago there was an investigation to look at your computer for something that turned out not to be going on, and that is sometimes very difficult to defend yourself against that. You go for a job interview, somebody digs that up and go. I mean, we could be creating something if that record is simply, we went to this person's computer and found nothing. You need to say that not just we looked at this person's computer because of suspicion of illegal activity of whatever form, and that's the only thing the record shows, that can carry with you the rest of your life.
Okay, I saw over here. Yes.
Let me, and I'm going to weigh in here just so that people know, this is not a daily occurrence. This is not a weekly occurrence. This is not a monthly occurrence. I can count, thank God, on one hand, usually, in the course of a year where we may be directed to do that. So I don't want the impression, again, that the general counsel has got a wheel that she spins and, oh, today it's Eric Reed. Hello, you've won. It just doesn't quite work that way. The only other thing I'm going to say is to, and again, that this is not an IT issue, as was noted. That's a separate discussion. But I wouldn't minimize the provost's comments about the Internet is forever. And you'd be surprised. And I know this because when we hire staff, I Google them. And you know, it's stuff out there, it's incredible. And for some of you, I think most of you, or if not all of you here, are tenured on the staff side. And so you might feel a little more protection, you know, if there was something that came out and, yeah, well, that may be the case, but, you know, my colleagues know me and blah, blah, blah. Staff don't have those same protections. And so, anyways, that's Bob. This is just me saying, I'd be careful. You'd be surprised how long things live on the Internet and how they can take on a life of their own virally and have very little way to stop it. There's some websites that exist that there was a story about 2 months ago about these are websites where jilted husbands, spouses, wives, whatever, take to post rejoinders and pictures and accusations against their former friend, and they're out there. And I mean, you Google, it's amazing. So things just spiral out of control, unfortunately, on the net. So let me just stop there because I know we have other questions that I can.
Okay, and yes, and I think there's a microphone somewhere on the table there.
I just wanted to add, Julie Shadowin, that if the general counsel is truly only going to do this in the case of a warrant or a subpoena, it's public record anyway, and there is going to be a very clear paper trail that anyone can find by Googling your name through the public record searches. So I guess I agree that if those are the only two cases that the general counsel is going to get involved with searching someone's record, then you know, for those of you that are worried that this is not going to have a paper trail, there is going to be a very clear paper trail outside the university. But I do want to make sure that those are the only two instances that general counsel is going to get involved if she is court-ordered to do so through a subpoena or a search warrant.
Well, I will say this again. This is a general counsel discussion, and Deborah Wilkins can defend or advocate is better than I can. But there are situations, we've had situations where we've had faculty members stalking another faculty member. Now, and that comes to us as a complaint through our traditional complaint system, the ombudsman or the HR office, or you know, whatever that process is. And there's an internal investigation sometimes, and this has been the case where they've come to us and they have not wanted, they've not gone to BGPD. They came to us and they lodged an internal complaint. Now, we have to, by duty, I think, follow up and investigate that. And so is there a subpoena in that case? No. Are we duty-bound to investigate if we have an employee who feels physically threatened and harmed by another employee? I would say yes. But, I'm not an attorney. I only play one on TV. I don't even play one on TV. So I would say that there are certain situations that might be a little bit different. And the other thing I would say is that not all subpoenas are public. And I've been the grand jury foreperson. And so I can speak in Warren County. So
I
yeah, maybe so.
Nothing comes from them, I think. I think then they're not. I think that's the case. Are there any other comments, questions, concerns about this particular policy? Okay. Again, if you have further comment about that, please send those along. You can send those to me, or you can go ahead and send those to Bob as well, I'm sure, and we can address those. Plus, we've got Jennifer, I know, has been diligently taking down all of these comments to pass along as well. So, sure, absolutely.
My name is Angela Briggs. I noticed that in the policy, it states that when accessing user data, the university will make reasonable efforts to notify the affected user, except when such notification may be inappropriate, impractical, or unlawful. When would it be inappropriate or impractical?
Someone's stalking another person.
Would that be inappropriate?
I think that would certainly alter, yeah.
So what would be impractical?
I don't know if I can come up with an example right off the top of my head.
The person may be out of the country, they may not be here, there may be some reason we can't get a hold of them. That's an impractical situation.
Okay. Other comments before we move on to the next one? Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the third IT policy, which is 5.5050, privacy of electronic information.
Well, let me get it here.
Comments, yes.
This is Senator Reeves. I just wanted to applaud the IT in this policy on page 2, I believe. There's a very kind of specific list of situations where IT intervenes or that kind of thing. And I just want to say I think that's really a great model to follow with the other policies or with 5.0, 5.0.2.0, whatever it is. In terms of, you know, what given situations might be that these things would be necessitated. So I just wanted to offer that as a comment.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Yes.
In that same list that Senator Reeves just mentioned, I think it's a great list, too. I think you did an excellent job on this. But I would like to add the same thing that we just discussed, that such access must be logged, noting who requested this information and in what capacity. So, again, it's transparent. There's a trail. If you're asking for it, you're asking for it on a need-to-know basis. But someone would know who needed to know.
I will forward that on to General Counsel. You bet.
Okay. Thank you.
In that bullet list, I'm sorry, Julie Shadone again, I think lawful representative needs to be clearly defined because not in every case is a spouse, parent, a lawful representative.
Okay, I'm trying to, I'm sure it's, I just don't see it off the top
it
of my,
the,
which bullet are you?
Providing okay. Access to email and files to a lawful representative.
Okay.
Power of attorney and executor,
okay.
I get, but the other two are not always legal
yep.
representatives.
Okay, thank you.
Any comments that you have, please pass those along if you think of anything after you leave, and we'll be happy to get you that information and comments written down for you. But thank you both.
Thank you. I appreciate your taking the time out of your meeting to let us chat with you. Appreciate it.
Okay, and I appreciate everybody allowing us to move that up a little bit so that they could get to their next meeting that's coming up, their next event. So now we move on to our standing committee reports and recommendations. Graduate Council, Beth?
I move the approval of the October 10th Graduate Council report.
Is there any discussion on this report? Okay. Hearing none, then motion. We have a motion to approve. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Sorry?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, that was graduate faculty only. Yes, sorry. I forget to mention that about 2/3 of the time. Yes, that is graduate faculty only. University Curriculum Committee, Ashley.
Yes, move to approve the items on the agenda from the University Curriculum Committee.
Okay, and this is the UCC report, so this is the first item. We'll move on to those individual policies here in just a moment. So any discussion on the individual report from the UCC? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. And then we've got three notes under there. We have two policies that have come through the UCC that are revised policies that have been before the Senate previously and were sent back to committee and were sent for various amounts of work. So we have revised items on there. Hopefully you can see some of the revisions that have happened. We specifically got the versions that had the changes made on there because I wanted it to be clear to the senators what changes had been made on those items. So we've got policy 1.3130, and Ashley, do you have any comment on that one? Okay, do you want to make a motion?
Sure can. Policy move to approve policy 3.3130.
Okay, is there any second on that?
Second.
All right, any discussion on that policy, which is the advising relative to declaration and change of program of study as revised? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The second one, the granting academic credit for prior learning is demonstrated in a student-developed portfolio. Ashley, would you like to make a motion on
that? Yeah, motion to approve the granting academic credit for prior learning.
Is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion on this. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, like sign? Okay. I did want to make a note, and I'll just go ahead and comment on this. This is something that I discussed with Ashley and also discussed with Sylvia Geico at some length. And I guess Frida was on this one as well. So we had some things that came through the previous UCC report, so from Senate last time, and that's this report that's posted here. There were some revisions that were actually necessary to that report after it came through Senate. Now, those revisions, I'm going to list them out to you so that you know, and that's why I posted this report to you. This was, you know, everybody approved this down the line as far as to the provost. So here were the revisions. One of them was very straightforward, and that is that on the agenda for that, it said under delete a course, the certificate in advanced accounting studies is actually a program deletion and should have been listed under a separate heading for delete a program. That's just wording on the agenda. That's all it is. That's the first one. The second one is a little more substantive. It's the final item on the UCC guidelines was remanded back to the UCC steering subcommittee at the September 26th UCC meeting due to conflicts between proposed procedure and the current University Senate charter. So that guidelines item should not have been in that UCC document. It was not actually approved by the UCC to come forward to the SEC and to Senate. It just was not, unfortunately, caught along the way as being still on the tail end of that document. And so the document as passed still had that guidelines in it. It should have been removed from the report prior to submission, so it has been withdrawn from final Senate approval. And so that's the note that I made on it for Senate approval. That was withdrawn for actual Senate approval. Both of those changes, then I said, within that wording were going to be announced to the SEC and the Senate, which I'm doing now. So is there any concern or comment regarding that change? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's move on to academic quality.
Move to approve the October 28th academic quality report.
Okay. Is there any comment on that academic quality report? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Faculty welfare and professional responsibility, Tucker.
Davis, academic support. I move to approve the Faculty Welfare Committee report.
Okay. Any comment about that item? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. There is no report from the General Education Committee. There is no business listed under old business, so new business is in order. We have several items from the Colonnade Committee, Colonnade courses for approval, Art 100, Communications 200, et cetera, that list. Is there a motion for approval from Colonnade? Yes. All right. Any second on that, please?
Second.
Is there any discussion on those items? All those in favor of approval of those items, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Moving on to the explorations courses for Colonnade. Can I get a motion of approval for those, please? A second? All right. Who was the motion to approve? Okay, thank you. And is there any discussion on those items, the biology items that are there under explorations? Okay, hearing none, then all those in favor of approval of those courses, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. We have already moved through the information items, of course, for IT policies. There's just a few other things on the agenda for us, really just some announcements there. On site evaluations, there was a discussion that kind of came across online. There was a faculty all email that had come out, and then some discussion resulted from that between myself and the provost, and then I brought this up at SEC. And so SEC has recommended that academic quality discuss the items on the site evaluations, you know, approximately every 2 years, and then consider if they need to be changed. So those are those items that the students are actually indicating for, just to see if they need to be changed, because apparently there is a large group of those items in a pool to choose from for that particular document. So that was approved by the SEC, and then academic quality has also been directed to have a conversation about teaching evaluation methods across WKU. So how do we look at teaching evaluation and evaluate faculty on their teaching? So not just with site evals, but what is happening through that evaluation process? Is there a better method for doing that, and you know, what are some different methods? And there's probably not a best fit for every department. We understand that. So just kind of a directive to look into that a little bit. The editing committee for work on faculty governance document has been appointed. I have five people who have agreed to be on that committee. Jennifer Hanley, Mark Reeves, Jill Brown, Eric Reed, and Rick Grieve have agreed to be on that committee. If there's anyone else who has high interest in being on that committee, then please let me know, and I'm sure they'd be happy to have someone else join them. We did have two faculty forums about this, and so those faculty forums were held this last Tuesday and then the previous Wednesday. Those were both from 3 to 4 approximately in the MMTH auditorium. We had a few people show up to those. There is an online forum available for discussion for that, so I would encourage all of you to, you can go into Blackboard under the organizations tab. It was on the most recent email that I sent out. There was a link to it, but under the organizations tab, once you log into Blackboard, there's actually a little note about the Faculty Governance Committee discussion forum there, and all you have to do is click on that link and you can self-enroll in that discussion. And so this is just one of those discussion board kinds of forums that's there for this particular document. You will also find on that Blackboard site the two audio files, well, it's video files as well, for the two fora that were held, the one on Wednesday and then the one on the subsequent Tuesday. The audio is not very loud, but I think if you crank it up a little bit, you can hear what's being said at those. And there was some good discussion that happened. Few people, but there was some very good discussion about that particular document. The last thing was posted for you all, and that was just the results of, I'm not able to display that page. You guys are able to bring that up. That was the election that we held, and this was during the SEC meeting. This is directed by the Senate Charter that we have a lot draw for those particular committees, the Advisory Committees on Faculty Continuance and Tenure and the Advisory Committee on Faculty Grievance. And so the list of those faculty members that were selected and their alternates is listed online for you. Is there any further business? Hearing none, do I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
And all is in favor? Hand up.